the solution. That would be all for me. It's interesting if somebody look in the internet to see how the alligator fish that existed in time of dinosaurs and still survives till today, it looks like. And there are fishermen in Illinois River showing that big fish, 300 pounds fish. I'm not sure why that fish is has never bite anybody. Because if you look at it, it's scary. Anyhow, thank you very much, Dr. Roy. Back to you and to XC.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, yeah, but Wes, I just want to bring up this one email he sent. You know, it's hard to describe on ham radio, but it's a couple of pieces of wood put together, and when you look at it, creates an optical illusion. It's a real strange effect. And then, you know, when you watch the YouTube, you know, there's this guy and he shows you how he does it. You know, he cuts up all the different pieces and the angles and everything. But I just want to let you know, Wes, I did look at that. I got a kick out of that. It's not, of course, you know, you can't grab it on radio. But you know, if you had the website up, it's pretty interesting to look at. Back to you.
Dr. Roy, for your comment.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much what I said earlier tonight, that it's an interesting video, but it loses a lot in the translation to a radio.
Yeah, so that was, I'm not even sure how, what kind of wording could be used to present, to sort of paint a picture with words that would describe that effect. It's an optical illusion, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, if you could do that with words, it would be a far bigger thing, and no one would need television. But unfortunately, the less important vision, especially optical illusions. You know, it's kind of difficult to get most of the idea of optical illusions across by just describing them with words.
Thank you very much, Paul, for mentioning it. Yes, I sent it for the amusement of you and Dr. Roy. I have no words how to say it. Maybe you can try it. Paul, you want to take a try?
You'd have to follow the guy's directions on how he cut these couple of pieces of wood up and how he glued them together and all. But when you look at it, it looks like, if you look at it for 1 second, it looks like it's connected in a certain direction. And then if you blink, it now looks like, you know, it's completely connected in another direction, you know. The angles all change. But, you know, it's revealing when you look off to the side. Looking at it in person, you would see it right away. But, you know, because it's a picture of what you're looking at, this thing sitting on a table, it gives you that effect. But the second, if you're there in person, if you move your left or right, and you can see that it's actually an opening, and it's just the effect of the way you... Interesting, though. Just wanted to bring it up, let you know I watched it. Back to you, Wes.
Yeah, last year I decided that since I no longer have the mechanical shop with the CNC slates and mills, which I had as a part of the lab, I'm going to buy myself a wood shop. So I bought everything that a professional wood shop has just to play with it. What else is left? Thank you very much, and have a good one. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Okay, very good. By the way, there are a lot of 3D making models for those types of objects, where if you align the image in a particular way, it takes on a erroneous three-dimensional aspect. So there's lots of them. I must have built a dozen or so of those when I was doing a lot of 3D printing.
Okay, that's all for tonight. Have a good one to everybody. Thank you for listening. And to XZN, finish.
Okay, no, thank you. Thank you, Wes, as always, for your participation. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had some fun. I hope you learned a few things, and I hope you'll join us next Sunday when we try this all over again. But it is now 10:16 and change. Certainly time for the SpaceNet Report with full WS2N.
We could do that. WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. Okay. By the way, I talked about the lunar eclipse coming up. I don't know if I said the right date. It's the 28th. But I'm not sure if I said that. Anyways, it's next. Thursday night. You know, between the 27th and the 28th. Anyway, the H-3 rocket lifted off from Takashima in Japan Space Center. It's the eighth one to launch, and it went up successfully. They've had some troubles with the H-3. Relatively a heavy vehicle, you know, for Japan. And it's the ninth one that launched. In the past, they've had problems with two of them. It's a new design. They went through two other H versions, the H2A and the H2B. H2A was used for all launches, very successful, many launches with that. The H2A and the H2B was specifically used for launching cargo to the International Space Station. Over the years, they did that 9 different times, and now they've replaced both of them with the new design H3. And they use the word H because it's a hydrogen, liquid hydrogen rocket. With oxygen as well. So they designed it more power. It's less expensive to build. They're expendable. You know, there's no reusability involved. But it does make, you know, help them make make their country competitive. And they're the ones that want to see. The HTV, now it's called the HTVX, is the cargo version to the International Space Station. I mentioned this before, they also had plans on restocking the space station that was going to be going around the moon, the Gateway. So it was designed for that as well. This new one is HTVX. Like I said, the regular HTV was nine launches. Each one was about 1 year apart. But this new version they've already launched one successfully to the space station, and probably launch an average of one to the space station. Will they be able to do what they wanted to do in the future? Send cargo maybe to at least lunar orbit? They could have, but, you know, I'm sure they haven't given up on that idea, even so the Gateway has been canceled by Jared Isaacman, the new NASA administration, unfortunately. So let me just drop it. Okay, let me just talk about Musk and, he has plans of getting that Starship into orbit eventually, but he also has bigger plans. He wants to buy up thousands of acres of land along the coast of Louisiana. And the article was, said 130,000 acres of land. I mean, this is going to be like thousands of times bigger than what he has down in Boca Chica. That's what, you know, that's where he launches the Starship now. So, he's got plenty, he's got enough money, I guess, to buy up all this land. But he is getting pushback from the people that live there. So that remains to be seen. He wants to buy all this land so he could launch countless rockets from Louisiana, as well as Florida and Boca Chica. And he's also got launch facilities in California. But as of now, there were no planned starships to launch from California, but he planned on launching them from Louisiana. If that doesn't work out, he's also trying to bring back the idea of using offshore oil rigs. He planned to do that, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago or so. He bought up two platforms, oil platforms, and was in the process of converting them. But then he put that on hold. He even gave them names, Damius and Phobos, named them after the moons of Mars. So, you know, he has these wild dreams and of doing things and puts money into it and then puts it aside. And now, from what I read, he's planning on bringing that back to life. And his goal is to launch hundreds of, if not thousands, of these starships over the years. And for all these flights will be for data centers in space. We've talked about the feasibility of doing that in the future. You know, millions of flights would be required, and, you know. So, you know, in his mind, he needs tremendous amount of land, so he wants to buy up all the land. And when I say a big piece of land, 30 miles long along the coast, you know. So you know, it's what people do when they get enough money and they don't know what to do with it. You know, go buy up Twitter for $40 billion. That's what it cost them. What's it going to cost them to buy 130,000 acres in a coastal land in Louisiana? I really don't know. WS to it. Okay. Nothing heard. Anybody have any comments or questions or anything? Just thinking about the next topic I was going to talk about. You know, I want to talk about the what they plan on doing with some of the equipment that was supposed to be, you know, set for a gateway. But let me just drop and see if anybody has any questions.
KC2 SHO, just saying, we're here listening, and we do appreciate it, even if don't have any comments at the time.
Very good. Very good. And, yeah, as New Mexico, you're transmitting stuff from there.
Almost counting.
Yeah, there's always a lot of space activity in that state. You know, I hope they bring back the Starliner and they can start landing the Starliner again in White Sands down in White Sands, New Mexico. Anyway, yeah, I was going to bring up the Halo. You know, it was a module that's really almost completely built by NASA. HALO is an acronym for Habitation and Logistics Output. Outpost. Excuse me. That they plan on launching together with the PPE, the Power and Propulsion Element, which was also, you know, on its way from, you know, to being complete. They were going to bolt these two together on Earth, put them in a cargo bay of, not a starship, but a Falcon Heavy, you know, and that's Elon Musk's big rocket right now that actually works. And they were going to launch the two of them together, and they were going to put them into orbit around the moon. But, of course, now that's all but canceled. So what do they do with all these billions of dollars that they've already poured into these two modules? Well, the Power and Propulsion Element, which is, you know, what it says, it's a module that has a bunch of very big solar arrays, ROSA solar arrays, that's rollout solar arrays attached to it to create power, and they plan on producing like 60 kilowatts of power with this thing. And all that power is going to be used to drive, I believe it was four ion engines, all effect thrust engines. And, you know, you could lift them things up, and, you know, it's got some kind of propulsion out of it. I mean, you can't leave Earth with it, but you can move pretty good in space. Probably would have had maybe about 10 times the amount of power that, you know, some of the earlier designs of ion thrusters have. So they're going to take that, and they decide, well, we'll use that to send that to Mars. So they were going to build this, I guess you want to consider it a solar-powered vehicle to go to Mars quicker with this kind of propulsion. But instead of using the solar rays, plan on putting a fission, I guess it's probably going to be 235 uranium as the fuel to create enough electricity to power all these ion engines and everything else on board on the spacecraft. And this, the goal is to get it to Mars fast. Usually, minimum amount of time is around 7 months. Typically, have 7 months to launch from Earth to Mars. You know, they do that when the two planets are near each other. And that happens roughly every 2 years. In fact, almost 27 months, but roughly every 2 years, the two planets are very close to each other. And they can get, you know, 6 or 7 months out of it. So with this thing, they're expecting to increase that. Although I haven't heard the, you know, what their prediction would be. But, you know, let's say it's 4 months, you know, if they cut 3 months, you know, actual human flight in the future, you know, cut down the amount of food that you need, they cut down on the amount of radiation that you're going to get, the amount of fuel that you would actually need, could be cut back on. So this would be the first, solar-powered interplanetary vehicle that will be built. And then when it gets to Mars, they like the helicopter idea, the Ingenuity helicopter that flew on Mars that was supposed to do no more than five flights. They would have been happy to get two or three. It was so successful, they did 72 flights with Ingenuity, smaller spacecraft that was released by the rover. And they finally eventually quit after a couple of years. had a camera on board and all kinds of, you know, computer equipment to figure out where it was every time it landed, make sure it didn't land on a rock. Amazing helicopter. Big 4-foot blades, two blades. One spun clockwise, the other one counterclockwise. So with that success, they figured, well, we're sending this nuclear-powered rocket all the way to Mars. Let's power it up, with nuclear fusion. And when we get there, we'll have our payload. The payload's going to separate from the nuclear-powered rocket. And the payload's going to be three helicopters. It's going to come through the atmosphere with a parachute, HEO parachute, and then when it gets near the surface, instead of landing like Perseverance did the rover and then releasing the helicopter, when it gets near the surface, it's just going to, it's going to drop the heat shield, and that'll expose the three helicopters. And they're going to be released one at a time and fly down to the surface to do their work. And then, they have onboard solar panels, and they'll be able to fly from, location to location. That's their plan. Do I believe that's going to happen? Maybe. But their time scale is way off. Their game was in a couple of years. Sounds like, 2030 thing to me, minimum. Hey, can you field a question? Sure, go ahead with the question. WS2N.
Yeah, hey, Paul. It's Jeff from Pelham. The question is, and obviously this is I'm a neophyte when it comes to space travel, obviously, but my understanding is when you send something faster out into space, if you want to decelerate it, you need to spend just as much time decelerating as you spend accelerating. Is this a flyby, or is it supposed to decelerate somehow once it gets there? If you're shortening the time to get there, you're going faster, and somehow you gotta decelerate if you're gonna drop a payload, or am I missing something? ACTPL.
I haven't heard yet, but I know. If you're gonna get up to speed, I guess they could turn this whole thing around and keep the ion engines firing to try to slow themselves down to some point. I don't know. I don't know yet. I'll look into that. I saw a preliminary drawing of this thing, and it's still got solar panels on it, so I guess they could power it with that at some point, then light up the engines with the nuke. An actual fission system. By the way, I don't think the public's going to be crazy about launching this. First it's got to out of the Earth's atmosphere. Last time they had a problem with a regular RPG, radioisotope thermoelectric generator, that two of them on board Cassini when that thing launched, and there were protests. I mean, they had a hard time getting past all the protests. The idea of this thing going down and contaminating part of the Earth was pretty much unacceptable. Even so, that they've done it many, many times before. Cassini, they had a hard time with that one. They're gonna have a bigger problem. This thing, instead of just being a box-up situation like the RTGs, they produce around 109 watts of power. This thing's going to be
produce watts of power. It's a regular fission reactor. You know, is the public going to allow that? I don't know. They really don't. Yeah, they could say, okay, we'll start it up, you know, once it's on the way to Mars. But still, I mean, if the launch vehicle fails, you know, it comes back down through the atmosphere, you know, that could be a big issue. Although they have, well, with the RTGs anyway, they test those things. They crashed them into the surface of the Earth at high speed, hit it with all kinds of munitions, and, you know, that held up. I'm not even sure what this thing's going to look like yet, Jeff. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm assuming they, you know, they go through all the safety protocols, what have you. And I think the protests are mainly from lack of knowledge or information. But well, we'll see. You're messing around with fissile material, so an impact would be interesting, at least, and it would be an effective dirty bomb accidentally.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it won't explode, but it'd definitely be a dirty bomb. We'll see. Anyway, they poured all this money into PPE, you know, power propulsion unit, and the HALO, the habitat. And, you know, they're trying to save face. Okay, well, now we've got a purpose for this other thing. You know, we're not going to waste NASA's money. So we'll see how far that goes. Now, the HALO, that's another story. That's the habitat module. They said, okay, well, we'll use this thing. It's not going to orbit. Maybe we could, you know, put it on the surface of the moon. That was the first thing I heard. But if you look into the building of this thing, the habitat module is really built to orbit the moon, like forever. Which means, you know, you pressurize the inside, and now you got a vacuum on the outside. With, you know, no stresses, no, you know, all even pressures. It was designed like that. You put this thing on the moon, first of all, you know, as it lands on the moon, it wasn't designed for, you know, that kind of stress, you know, if it had like a rough landing. It's also not designed to be sitting on the moon's surface, where you got big temperature changes in the surface of the moon. You know, it was designed to have even heat all the way around. In fact, you know, there's all kinds of internal piping and everything to keep the heat even. They won't have that on the moon. The radiation system situation could also be a problem, from what I read. And the main problem would be the, you know, access in and out. It really wasn't designed to be open and closed over and over on the moon with the regolith, you know, which is, you know, the dirt or the surface of the moon. It's like a, they call it, it's very, you won't want to get this thing stuff in your lungs. It's very abrasive, this regolith. So if that gets into the hatches, you know, or even into the equipment, that might be a problem. So reading all of that, it looks like somebody must have, you know, realized the problems with actually doing that. So now they've changed it. They're saying, oh, okay, we're gonna still use the HALO module. They're not going to use the module at all. They're going to take the electronics and all the support gear and, you know, the stuff, you know, the guidance control, computers, the stuff that was put inside, and they're going to repurpose that and bring, you know, that will be part of the lunar surface project. I guess they're going to have to build a brand new module to put on the moon, and then the stuff will become part of it. But again, to save face, they're saying, well, we're going to just utilize all the electronics now and all the stuff that, you know, that was inside the and everything, you know. So I don't know. We're going to see. So again, a long time. It's going to be a long time before we see parts of the HALO module, part of the lunar surface. Any other comments, Jeff, or anybody else?
I'm sorry, we transitioned to lunar modules as opposed to Mars modules. Obviously, there's a translation there, but I'm sorry, I missed the thread a little bit. And is it just we do kind of training missions, as it were, to the moon and then extrapolate that somehow to Mars? You know?
Yeah, well, there's two modules, right? So they were supposed to be attached together. Right? They were going to be part of the Gateway orbital system. You know, they were just staying in this highly elliptical orbit, you know, 40,000 miles out, and then it was going to come close to the moon around 1,000 miles. And that was going to be their orbit designed for that. Okay, so now there's this power propulsion unit. Since it's all canceled, we'll take that module. And we're going to make that part of a spacecraft that's going to go to Mars and drop off helicopters at Mars, three helicopters. And to do that, we're going to invent this fission unit to make electricity to power this thing so it gets there quicker. Okay, we've saved the power propulsion unit, and that becomes a Mars mission. We're going to take the HALO mission, which was supposed to be the one that's going to go around, you know, around the moon and hold a crew of four. And now we're going to put that on the surface of the moon. And then, you know, so yeah, you've got to take two different modules that were meant to be together. They're going to send one off to Mars, and the other one's going to be part of the lunar surface. Back to you, John.
I have no problem with decorating the lunar surface a little bit more. I won't be protesting anything. I'm interested in seeing what they do. AC2PL, back to you. Thank you.
I concur. I was very happy when Cassini got off the ground and flew to orbit Saturn all those years. That was great. Very successful flight, and you know, being out by Saturn, they couldn't use the solar panels too far away, so they used the RTGs, the radioisotope thermoelectric generators, to power that all those years, you know. And not only was it a great flight, you know, taking off from Earth. And all those years to get them to Saturn, and many years orbiting Saturn, they said they came back was just terrific. So, you know, hopefully they could do the same with the power propulsion unit that flies to Mars. I want to see these three helicopters. At one time, I think they said at one time they were going to release, you know, before they hit the surface of the planet Mars, and they were going to just like fly off, you know, and do that. And then once they land successfully, hopefully, each one would be able to fly to different locations. They're still working on the idea of bringing back those test tubes. You know, they got dozens of those. Actually, there's 39 test tubes laying on the surface of Mars right now that Perseverance has put all over. And it was this, I guess, $10 billion mission that was planned for years, where they would go out and pick these things up with another rover and put them in a inside of a rocket that they were going to land on Mars, and that rocket was going to be, you know, launched from Mars, and it was going to dock with a European Space Agency vehicle in orbit, and that deorbit Mars and head to Earth with all these test tubes on board. But then they realized, we might not be able to send a rover. It's too expensive. So we'll send the rocket that's going to return these things. But now we're going to send, at that time, one helicopter, one of these ingenuity type of helicopters, and was going to fly around to the different locations and pick up these test tubes that are laying there. They know exactly where every single one are. Not going to get covered up with, dust or anything like that. It would take, 100 years. So they were going to pick them up with the helicopter, bring them over to the launch vehicle, and use that to launch back to Mars. That was all, they kept changing the idea of how they were going to do this. And then finally they got to the point where they just canceled the whole thing. The price started getting too high. But they had these tubes laying there. Are they going to take one or two of these helicopters that land on Mars? And, are they going to launch and land somewhere near where Perseverance is? Land somewhere, where that rover is, and then be able to fly to all different locations, and this thing going to be able to pick up all the tubes and at least put them in one spot, and then hopefully someday in the future send another vehicle to Mars with another rocket. By the way, that was all planned. I mean, Northrop Grumman was building this rocket that was going to launch from Mars, they could still do all this stuff, but I'm not holding my breath. Any comments? Okay. Anyway, there's an EVA planned. A couple of days. I think that was on the 18th. And today is the 16th. I think 2 days from now, on the International Space Station, you have two people that are going to go out. Anil Menon, he's from from NASA. He's going to be one of the EVA people, and then Sophie Andonaut is the European Space Agency woman. She's originally from France, and they're gonna go out on a 6.5-hour EVA a couple of days from now, and the goal is to disconnect a broken antenna. It's an antenna that they usually use. They have a number of antennas, but this one is one of the ones that they use to communicate with Earth, and I'm assuming it's one of the ones that would, communicate directly with Earth, because most of their transmissions, they transmit up to the TDRS satellites, the tracking data relay satellites, and those things redirect their signals back down to Earth, and that's how you get all the videos and all the communications. But apparently it's one of them. It sounds like to me, although I haven't confirmed it, that this is one of the ones that just would communicate with Earth. Eventually I'll find out. This thing is broken. When I say broken, it's not like it hit with a rock or anything. It must have a low noise detector on it. It must have some kind of electronics on it. Maybe it's got an as-L motor system, I haven't heard. Maybe that's broken. So anyway, they're going to disconnect this thing, and they need a new one. But NASA, in their wisdom, many years ago, configured for all the stuff eventually would fail. So they put these gigantic pallets in different locations on the International Space Station many years ago before the shuttle was retired. So what they're going to do is disconnect this. Eventually they're going to store that. And then they're going to bring back another one that's up there from the pallet and install it on the, they call it the Z1 truss. There's 11 different truss sections on the International Space Station. You know, you have like 15 different modules. But you also have these trusses that, you know, that are, you know, in line one after the other. And on the trusses, they have these massive heat rejection panels, you know, filled with ammonia to get rid of the heat. So you have those things, and then you have really big solar panels. You know, collectively, it's like, I think they're up at around 105 kilowatts of power that they get from the solar panels. But, you know, all this stuff is attached to these trusses. And, you know, they have the port side that one goes out one side. You got five of them that go out that way, and another five go the other way. And then you have another one attached to the Discovery module, which attaches to all of these, you know, that's the main truss section. They call it the Z1, because it's a zenith position of the space station. So the Z1 truss has all tons of equipment, all wires and cables, and all, it's a rat nest of stuff. So they're going to have their hands full trying to disconnect this antenna and putting a new one on. So we'll see. We'll see how that works. They're talking about 6.5 hours, and usually they have other projects that they're going to do, or other things that, you know, but from what I understand, this is the only thing that they need to do. So replacing a failed, they've done this type of thing before with the different antennas and cameras and things all over. You know, eventually they fail. I think what happens is the cosmic rays get to the electronics and eventually they quit. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. I just want to talk a few seconds about Blue Origin. That's Jeff Bezos' company. Jeff Bezos of Amazon. He has Blue Origin, and he has a whole plan of putting, again, millions of rockets into space. And he's the company that's put up 98 people that they have launched on suborbital flights on the new Shepard rocket. And now, temporarily anyway, that's canceled. They're putting all their manpower and work load into getting the new Glenn rocket back into operation. So far, they've launched three of these things. You know, the first one made it to orbit successfully, which is unusual for, you know, brand new rockets when they're built. But the, you know, that worked out okay. The second and third were launched successfully, and they also returned successfully on a barge twice. So they were going in the right direction until they tried to launch again another one, and that thing blew up. Yeah, now they found out the O2 or oxygen valve on one of the B-4 rocket engines blew. I don't know if it was the valve itself, they said it failed. I mean, what was the piping that went to the valve? I don't know yet. But anyway, they said that they had to fix all this. And they're in the process of rebuilding that launch complex because the whole thing blew up when that rocket blew. Now, they realized that they're going to need not only this launch complex, but another launch complex. They're launching off of launch complex 36A. 36B is available, and they've now taken that over, and they have started reworking that. That wasn't the original plan, but it is now. And they plan on making that even a bigger launch complex than the one that they were using for the New Glenn. Because they're also making an upgraded New Glenn rocket. The original one has, seven engines to launch on the first stage. And then in the second stage, they had two engines. They're called BE-3 engines. BE-3 engines, each BE-3 engine, they know what they're doing with that one, because that thing has flown dozens of times back on Earth. That's the one that they use for the crew and cargo into suborbital space, and it's a very successful engine, so they use two of them on the second stage, so they have a seven, and then they have two. But the new upgraded version of the New Glenn now will have nine engines, and for a first stage, instead of the seven and instead of the two, for the second stage, they're going to put four on. So they're going to call it the a 9-4 New Glenn rocket. But they need a bigger launch complex.
That time complete.
So they're rebuilding that. Actually, they're building that. The other one they're rebuilding just blew up. So then I have two side by side. We'll see how it goes. I really wish them luck. They were doing so good until that one failure. Elon Musk had many, many failures. I hope Jeff Bezos does not. He has a different way about him. They plan and test, and they're a little on the slow side, but their theory is, better slow than fast, and having things break and blow up. Elon Musk is different. Launch, if it blows up, we'll fix it the next time. So he's got a flight coming up at the end of the month. When I say he, Musk. He plans on launching another Starship. This time he's going to try to get into orbit. He's launched 13 of these monster vehicles, these 400-plus foot rockets, bigger than the Saturn V, or even bigger than the SLS that NASA's building. We'll see what happens here. That should be the end of the month. He plans on getting into orbit. On top of that, the first stage, I guess, he's still planning on having that go into the Gulf of Mexico. But the second stage is going to go around the Earth once. I don't know if he's going to do multiple orbits, but it's going to go around at least once and then come back to Texas. He comes flying through the sky, and he's going to hope to flip it and have it come down vertically. And he's going to have these big arms come out on a launch complex, and he's going to try to catch the Starship. His goal is to do this over and over again. He's done it three times with the booster. So we'll see if he can do it with the Starship. I think he's got a chance, because he's done it a couple of times where the Starship comes down vertically in the Indian Ocean. All their test flights with suborbital launch from Texas come down in the Indian Ocean near Australia. And the last one was so successful, it came down vertically. And, people have. they know exactly, you know, where it is. And if they had some kind of a device to catch in the middle of the Indian Ocean, they would have been able to do it. And, in fact, Elon Musk is now even thinking of that, to have offshore launch facilities where he could not only launch these starships, but he could actually have them come back and catch them out at sea. So, I mean, you know, we'll see how he does. If he doesn't run out of money, well, he's the richest guy in the world. I guess it's still possible. We'll see. As normal, we'll follow it from week to week, and we'll be back next week to report on hopefully a couple of these successes. But now I'm looking at the time. Let me close down. We'll see if anybody has a comment before I do that. WS2S. Nothing heard. Roy, I'm going to turn it over to you. My Mark always has another net on tomorrow night, and that always comes on 8:30 on these repeaters at the Club Info Net, followed by Swap and Shop, followed by Radio Newsline. Roy, over to you. AC2GS, WS2N. Put a space in that report for the tech net. Over to you, Roy.
Okie doke, this is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I thank everyone and appreciate everyone for their participation tonight. I hope you'll return next Sunday when we try and do this all over again. As is my usual practice, let me tell you of some comments from two clever people, one our own Dick K2IW. Sorry about that.
Anyway,
I was throwing
out the audio. WS2M. W3, guys.
Okay, Paul. Hopefully I'm back where I belong. I got thrown off of All Star to the very end. As the RW used to say, be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So, happy. And if you possibly can, come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we'll try and do this all over again. AC2GS, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraine.
Okay, came through on that. You break up once in a while, you know, including now. But eventually, I guess we'll figure that out someday.
Okay, Paul, I mean, you the control theater, but hopefully it'll be fixed by next Sunday.
Very good. Very good. Have a good night, guys.
W2VL repeater.
With some programming, can somebody give me a quick radio check, see if I got this repeater? Should be W2VL. W2VL. This direct repeater. Radio check for a repeater.
W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m. Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Hey, good morning, Rich. How's it going?
So far for the morning, I guess it's going pretty good. I didn't think the rain was going to carry into the morning, but I guess we're going to have it for a little while longer.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funky out here. So, I'm just going for a blood test. Right near your house, actually.
Who's up by me?
I'm going to a lab.
In 2 miles.
No big deal. Hempstead Turnpike.
It's up by me. 2 miles, whatever. It's amazing. Well, I was going to say it's amazing how the medical offices arise, but I assume you're right near St. Joseph's. So I guess that's why there's a lot of medical buildings, like everything up here, because the hospital has expanded.